There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Professional wrestling, like real life, is full of surprises. Hi, everyone. It's Freddie Prinze Jr. And it's no surprise I can talk wrestling all day, any day. Kind of like how State Farm agents can talk insurance and help you choose the right coverage. When it comes to important insurance decisions, let State Farm support you with the coverage you need, backed with 24/7 support. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Locatora Radio is a radiophonic novela,
which is just a very extra way of saying
a podcast.
I'm Diosa FM.
And I am Mala Munoz.
Locatora Radio is your prima's favorite podcast, hosted by us, Mala and Diosa.
We're two IG friends turned podcast partners, breaking down pop culture, feminism, sexual wellness, and offering fresh takes on trending topics through nuanced interviews with up-and-coming Latinx creatives.
Known as Las Locatoras, Las Mamis of Myth and Bullshit, The Podcasteras Next Door, and Las Podcasteras Peligrosas, we've been podcasting independently since 2016, and we're bringing our radiophonic novela to the My Cultura Network to continue sharing stories from the Latinx community.
Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 7.
Take us to your network!
Hola, hola, locamores. Welcome back to Season 7 of Locatora Radio. I'm Diosa.
And I am Mala, and we are your hosts. We have a super incredible, extra special guest here in studio with us today, Cerise Castle, and we're just going to do a real quick intro and then bring on Cerise and start talking. Cerise Castle wrote a 15-part series about the LA Sheriff deputy gangs. She is an LA journalist and podcast host, and we're here to talk all about a brand new podcast that Cerise is hosting, A Tradition of Violence, which is a show about the deputy gangs that operate within the LA County Sheriff's Department. So Cerise, can you please say hello and introduce yourself for our listeners?
Hi, it's so great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, it's truly an honor, Cerise, to be able to interview you. I happened to be at USC a couple weeks ago when you were on a panel there. And so it was really great to just hear some of your story and some of the work that you've been doing. And so I'm just super happy. And it just so happened that Mala had actually emailed you a couple weeks before to schedule this. And so I love the serendipitous nature of it. And so just to get us started, you know, you have an incredible story with really what got you started with this 15-part series about the LA Sheriff deputy gangs. And can you tell me about the origin story and really what you were going through, what season in your life you were in when you decided to take on this endeavor?
Of course, yeah. So the story of me getting interested in the topic of deputy gangs really goes back to my childhood. I grew up in the Los Angeles area, and ever since I was a little kid, I heard about deputy gangs from older children on the playground, my brother, teachers, my mom. There was always this warning of, you know, watch out for deputy sheriffs because they're likely in a gang. And I think that's the case for a lot of Black and brown kids growing up in the LA area, in certain neighborhoods. It's just sort of an accepted fact. And it always was the sort of thing that intrigued me and never really made sense, because those same police officers that I was being warned about were coming into my school and saying, stay out of gangs, you know, gangs are bad, and demonizing kids that, you know, I had grown up with and were affiliated with gangs, sometimes members of these gangs, just by virtue of where they grew up. And they were being painted as these awful people. And at the same time, I'm being told by trusted people, those same officers are actually in a gang themselves. That never really made sense to me. And I can remember going to the library when I was a kid and trying to find out more about deputy gangs and trying to find some sort of, you know, reckoning to help me make sense of this concept, because it just wasn't computing. And there was never anything in depth there. I would find one-off articles, sort of very surface things, but nothing really looking deeply into who these people were, why they were doing what they were doing, where they came from, that sort of thing. And I'm appreciative to the journalists that, you know, wrote those articles that, you know, were scratching the surface and like starting to chip away at the deluge that came many, many years later, because that was instrumental in helping me build my interest and my research later. So I kept coming back to this question throughout my life, but there was never much more there. So in 2020, I was here in Los Angeles working for a local radio station, and I was covering the protests that were breaking out across the city in response to the murder of George Floyd. And while I was out working as a journalist, I was shot by a police officer with a less lethal, so-called less lethal munition. This happened while I was identifying myself as press. I had a bunch of gear in my hands that I captured on photo, the officer actually turning, looking at me and firing at me. And the injuries that resulted from that put me on bed rest for about 6 months. I was in a cast. I had crutches. I wasn't supposed to be out in the field working. And I was just supposed to be essentially on my couch. And I didn't feel great about that. You know, being a journalist of color at that point, I was in a mostly white organization. And we were in this historic moment of people at least wanting to have a conversation about race and racism and how that impacts everything day to day. And, you know, journalistic institutions were having these so-called reckonings with racism. I just didn't feel good about being on my couch in that moment. So I was on my couch just sort of, you know, recovering and, you know, processing the trauma of being shot on the job. And I was watching the news, as a journalist does, and I saw that a young man, an 18-year-old, had been killed in the Gardena area working as a security guard. And very quickly it came out that this young man, Andres Guardado, he was killed by two deputies that were trying to get into a deputy gang. And this was information that was revealed by a deputy working with them. And here it was again, this deputy gang issue in my face. And I was just thinking to myself, wow, okay, like this keeps coming up for me. I don't have anything on my plan for the next 6 months. I'm supposed to be sitting on my couch. Let me start researching this. I can do that from my couch. So I did. I started filing public records requests, and I uncovered this Excel sheet that the county keeps of all of the litigation related to deputy gangs. And once I recovered that, that was basically my treasure map. And I used that to find the information that became A Tradition of Violence, the initial 15-part series.
So there has been, in the past, folks who have, like, filed lawsuits against the sheriff's department for gang-related crimes against the public, I would assume.
Tons. So on average, the sheriff's department kills about 24 people a year. And a lot of those shootings are done by deputies that, one, have shot someone before, or two, have some kind of affiliation with a deputy gang. And that information usually comes out in lawsuits, because in lawsuits, they have these things called depositions where you go in and, just like in court, you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And if you don't, you will face criminal consequences. Mm-hmm. And in these lines of questionings, in these depositions, they find out about these deputy gangs. And the county takes note of that, because the county is representing these deputies in these depositions. And a lot of times, you know, when it comes out in these depositions that the deputies are part of a deputy gang and the violence is potentially being committed as part of a deputy gang ritual, the county wants to settle, and that's stored, and they take note of that.
This is really fascinating and impactful information. Thank you so much for sharing this with our listeners.
Yeah, I have a follow-up question, Cerise, about the reporting process. So my question is, like, how did you balance the urgency of, like, wanting to get this story out, wanting the public to know that on a mass level, right, that sheriff deputy gangs exist, while also doing, like, really thorough reporting? Like, how did you balance that workload and wanting to, like, meet your internal deadlines?
Not well, honestly. I was working around the clock, and I put a lot of pressure on myself to really get this out. It felt very urgent. This is a question that I'd had for at least, you know, 20 years, I would say. And I really wanted to meet the moment that we were in. So I was working, like, man, I would get up at like 7 o'clock in the morning and not stop working until like 11 o'clock at night, just in front of my computer all day, reading page after page of lawsuit, deposition transcripts, investigation files. And I wasn't really managing it well. I wasn't doing a lot of self-care. I mean, I was going to physical therapy. That, I don't know if that really counts as self-care, but it wasn't healthy, definitely. And I feel like I need to say that. And I've had to put a lot of practice into being better about that, because that does start to wear on your reporting and you will burn yourself out. And I definitely did burn out towards the end of it. It's a lot of really awful information that you're taking on, looking into a series like this, reading a series like this, listening to a podcast discussing this content. And it's really important, I think, to talk about taking care of yourself when engaging in that content too. That's just as important. You can't really do an effective job, whether that be reporting on it, processing it, and going out and making change, unless you're also taking care of yourself.
Yeah, I appreciate that you bring that in, taking care of yourself in the making of and the researching of this series. How did you continue to take care of yourself after you put your findings out into the world? Because your reporting on the sheriff's gangs went, like, ultra, mega, viral, global, like, had a huge digital footprint. Like, people were putting, like, signage up on the freeway overpasses and graffiti, and, like, your reporting had a global reach and, like, definitely got noticed by the sheriffs themselves, including the gang members, I would assume. So taking care of yourself during the reporting process, but then what did that look like after you put your work out into the world?
A lot of it was safety planning. Unfortunately, doing this kind of work does come with a lot of negative feedback. I mean, like you said, the feedback has been overwhelmingly positive. Most of the feedback I get is from people that have had interaction with these deputy gangs and felt like they were kind of, you know, being gaslit by the world around them. And seeing this reporting was really reassuring to them. People that, you know, have been living in these communities and been facing this for generations, it was really healing, I think, in a lot of ways to have this recognition in printed and published form. But unfortunately, there are people that don't like it. And that's usually people that are engaging in this kind of behavior. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that has meant death threats via social media, mysterious phone calls and text messages. That was more so after the series. That's dissipated a lot. And that was really scary. I was detained at a press conference immediately following the publication of the series. And that I've never experienced anything like that. And that was really scary. The sheriff himself has made harassment type comments about me. He had a whole radio show where he called into question my credibility as a journalist, which is really harmful for a reporter, because all we have is our credibility. Mm-hmm. And if that is called into question, that could, you know, jeopardize my ability to provide for myself and my family. His campaign manager threatened to disclose my home address on Twitter. Yeah, and that has meant, you know, having to hire bodyguards when I go out and do certain assignments. It's meant moving. It's meant I had to go into hiding for a little bit following the publication of the series. And it's changed my lifestyle completely. I have had to alter what it is that I post on social media. I try not to have a front-facing personal life, because it has meant that those people have been threatened as well. I've had friends of mine that are threatened as a result of just, you know, being in a photo with me, mm-hmm. which is really upsetting.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
As an actor, a producer, and a proud Latino father, my days can get very busy, which is why I make sure to dedicate time to what's important, like supporting my community through my work, sharing my Colombian and Venezuelan culture, and being present for my family, which is everything to me. Hey everyone, it's Wilmer Valderrama, and we're reflecting on what matters most. I start by giving thanks for good support in my life whenever I need to make the big decisions. How about you? If it's insurance you need, State Farm is there to help you choose the right coverage for you. And State Farm offers great support 24/7. Just call an agent. State Farm is also a big supporter of My Cultura podcast network by helping to share our Latinx voices. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends.
In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you so much for sharing. I mean, for us, you know, we have received, though, you know, not at the same level, but over the years we have received, you know, death threats and rape threats. And because of the feminist content that we put out there, and we don't, there, a lot of it has been anonymous, so we'll never know. But our assumption is most likely like from our own community, from Latino men. And it really has like altered the way we even show up online, even though we are very front facing. But, and we have been indie for so long up until this season. And so I'm wondering, like, I'm curious about the connections or correlation you see between, you know, having the independence and freedom to do the type of stories that you want to do as a freelancer, but then also lacking maybe some of the institutional quote protection from like a legacy media company. And so how have you been navigating that type of the work that you do?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. And that's something that I try to talk about a lot when I'm in these legacy journalism spaces. I think that I receive so much hate as it is because, or I did initially, because I was a freelancer writing this for a small independent outlet, whereas someone that would have written this at a, you know, a New York Times, a Los Angeles Times, they don't feel as easy to get to, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I wasn't, you know, a reporter that you're reading every day in the paper with, you know, this institution behind. So I was just, you know, as a lot of them saw me, I was an activist in quotations on a blog. I was, right, you know, someone that could be touched. And they tried those press conferences. I mean, they still, you know, play around with me at press conferences today. The last time I tried to attend a press conference, I watched the captain of the media relations wave every reporter in and point to me and say, "Not Cerise."
Wow.
So it's a really important thing. And I want to give a shout out to Brittany Mejia at the LA Times. She refused to go in until I could go in as well. And we don't often see that kind of camaraderie and solidarity in the journalism community. I don't think it's a coincidence that most of the other reporters were white men that were perfectly fine with walking past me and letting me go in. But Brittany Mejia, a Latina woman, saw me and said, "No, I'm not going to do that. I want her to come in too."
Thank you for sharing that story. I was curious about whether the LA Times and other like legacy media have supported you in your reporting or expanded upon it or platformed you or what that relationship has looked like, because obviously they see what you're doing and what you're working on.
Initially, no. I mean, I was like completely dismissed, I would say. I mean, there were some journalists at the LA Times that, you know, did support me in their way, you know, sharing my articles. Justin Ray, he's no longer at the Los Angeles Times, but he featured my reporting in a newsletter. Emily Hoven at Cal Matters also put my series in her newsletter. So stuff like that, that's really important because those newsletters are going out to, you know, hundreds of thousands of people every day. But unfortunately, I've also seen a lot of, frankly, what I feel is just blatant disrespect
at other legacy outlets. Rolling Stone, The New Yorker, both subsequently wrote pieces about deputy gangs that, to me, appeared to borrow heavily from my reporting, almost word for word. Like, I could point to part, 15 of the series and say, this is, essentially the same story.
Yeah.
And not citing my reporting.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. We have definitely experienced like our share of like, folks minimizing the work that we do, even now that we're like at an even higher caliber, technically we're with iHeartMedia. There's still a level of, people not taking our work seriously. And we see Locatora Radio as an audio archive, which is for us able to document the work that incredible journalists like yourself are doing, which is why we were so excited to have you on. And because you're working on your own podcast, that serves as an archive as well for folks that maybe reading a 15-part series is not for them, but hearing it is more up their alley. And so I want to ask you specifically about the podcast, A Tradition of Violence, and how that came to be. My assumption is it's an extension of the 15-part series, but in your own words, I'd love to hear how that came about and how you're formatting it to reach people that are audio first.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret, like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I often get asked why I'm such a big fan of wrestling. And it's all thanks to my grandma. Growing up, we would watch matches together, and that bond turned me into a lifelong fan. Hi, I'm Freddie Prinze Jr., and on my podcast, Wrestling with Freddie, we know how important it is to have the right teammate, because things can get pretty tricky quick. So, when things get complicated and you need help, State Farm gives you options. They show you what's possible for ensuring what matters to you. One of the things that matters to me: sharing memories and revisiting wrestling's greatest moments. And with State Farm's support of the My Cultura podcast network, I get to do just that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you listen to podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, that's a great question. So when I wrote the series, it was conceptualized as a written series, but I always knew that I wanted to take it into other media formats to make it accessible to other people. Like you said, it's not everyone isn't going to sit down and read a 15-part series. I think I printed it out and it was over 200 pages. That's not for everyone. Mm-hmm. And you know, I wanted to make the information as accessible as possible. And a podcast, I've worked in, you know, written media, I've worked in audio journalism and television journalism. So a podcast to me felt like a logical next step because a lot of the interviews that I had done were on the phone. I had connections with people. I knew I wanted to keep the reporting up, and I pursued a podcast project with iHeartMedia, and we're in the midst of putting it out now. It's going to be 14 episodes, and like the series, it dives into the history of the 18 deputy gangs that I uncovered in that initial series, but I've uncovered two more in the years since doing that reporting, so we're going to be talking about these two more deputy gangs. Unfortunately, I've been able to connect several additional police killings to these deputy gangs. And with that, I've also built some more databases for the public to use that I'm really excited about.
It really puts into perspective also, as Angelenos, we hear so much about the city being unsafe and crime and violence. But when we think about who's committing many, many acts of violence and committing crimes, to be able to track crimes committed by the sheriffs, by deputy gangs, it really adds a new sort of layer to our understanding of like violence in the city. I appreciate your work for that as well, because I think it's so easy to scapegoat the poor, the homeless, people of color, when we have like a really big like monster here that has not been addressed properly. And on that note, in the podcast, you guys talk about this sort of like Wild West kind of like identity that the sheriffs have and how that goes back all the way even to the founding of California and like settlers, like white men installing sheriffs and installing law enforcement as they were founding towns and cities and settling and creating their systems of government here. And I'm wondering if like you can share with us, based on your reporting and your research, how those demographics are the same or how they have shifted over time. Because I think anyone in LA can look around and notice that a lot of our sheriffs, a lot of our LAPD are actually people of color, and a lot of them are Latino.
Yeah.
So what has that demographic shift looked like over time, and like what does it mean now?
I think there's so much at play here. I think it's like capitalism, definitely, how capitalism in the United States is linked to white supremacy, and how our notions, sometimes some people's notions of success, are linked to that white supremacist capitalism hybrid that drives so much of American culture, and how that is inherently linked to policing and how policing is carried out in this country.
Yeah, and we want to ask the question because in previous episodes, we had Odilia Romero of My Cielo LA on to talk about the leaked Fed tapes and the anti-Indigenous statements and anti-Black statements made by Nuri Martinez and Gil Cedillo and other members, right, or former members of LA City Council who were caught on those tapes. And we, because our audience is predominantly Latinx and predominantly LA-based, you know, we have to ask these questions and talk about these things. Because I think what we notice is this tendency towards like folks in our community asking for representation and empowerment and demanding it. But then once we get it and we're in positions of power, how are we now using it?
Right.
And how are we using our power and our numbers and our organizing for good or for evil? And are we acknowledging that these things are happening? I don't think we are as a community. Like, are we addressing the fact that LA sheriff's gangs are probably heavily Latino gangs?
And targeting other Latinos.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I'm curious, too, in your reporting, are you seeing that conflict, or are you seeing that education happening, or that pushback or that denial? Because what I'm also thinking about is all these sheriffs, like, they have families and they live in Southern California and they send their kids to school, and they're like parts of the community, they're neighbors, but they're also like agents of violence. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think the people that read my work for the most part are very much in line and aware of how this is all linked and how problematic a lot of this stuff is. So I haven't received, you know, negative feedback so much about that specific thing, but it's something that I want to make sure is present in the reporting, mm-hmm. and something that is being discussed in the reporting. I can't underestimate or like understate how important I think it is to talk about this. Like in East LA, for example, it's a mostly Latino station. They have a gang that is called the Banditos. You have to be Latino to be in the Banditos. And what do? They go out and brutalize people living in East LA that are other Latinos. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time, the people they're targeting, like, it's people that do not fit into this, you know, white supremacist, like, capitalist box. Like, these are poor Latinos. These are undocumented Latinos. These are Latinos that are indigenous.
Yeah, I just want to thank you for bringing that perspective, because for us, we're like constantly thinking of like, how can we push our community to have these conversations with us? And so for you to have, you know, so much of it is like, show me the data, right? And it's like, well, here's the reporting.
It's,
you know,
there.
It's there. I think it was in 2020, in 2020, when, you know, the sheriff called Supervisor Hilda Solis La Malinche.
Yeah.
Right. And right. So it's like this repeated pattern of behavior of, you know, verbal aggression, violence that has gone unchecked. And as we're recording, you know, the election has not been called, but he will potentially lose his seat.
And it's looking like Sheriff Villanueva did not win this election.
Right.
Yeah. There's obviously a lot of different factors, but, you know, as an Angeleno and as a journalist and someone very online, I can see the link between the reporting that you've done and this election cycle.
And so maybe, like, can you speak to that? Do you feel like your reporting has made an impact on the sheriff's election?
I think...
because we think the answer is yes.
Yeah, like, I don't want to. Maybe you don't want to say that, Cerise. So we'll say it.
But we feel like
people are waking up to it, because either you know and you don't want to admit it, or you didn't even know that they existed, and now you're second guessing. And we've had like a racial reckoning, you know, countrywide. And then there's also this reporting that has happened. So you may not want to say it, but we can see the link.
Thank you for saying that. I think I would come off as kind of like naive maybe if I said no. But I also want to say that my reporting is very much a vehicle of voices that have been talking about this issue for years and years, oftentimes longer than I've been alive. I very much see the reporting that I'm doing as facilitating, you know, platforming, giving space to people that have been living in this nightmare for the past 50 years, and for the first time had a chance to really share and talk about the consequences of having, you know, living in, you know, a police state, essentially, and the traumas that come with that. Yes. So, yeah, I do think my reporting made a difference, but it was done, you know, in line with a lot of great work that has been going on for a long time.
Thank you so much, Cerise, for sharing your story, your journalism, and your work with our listeners. And for those who maybe are just finding out about all of this, you never know, like, who the news is not reaching. Where can folks follow you? Where can folks tune in, read the work, and learn more about LA Deputy Sheriff's gangs and the tradition of violence?
Yeah, you can head to lasdgangs.com. And on that website, you can check out my original 15-part series. You'll get links to where to listen to my podcast, A Tradition of Violence. And you'll also be able to look at those databases that I was telling you about if you want to get to know the sheriff's deputies in your neighborhood and the violence that they've committed against your neighbors. If you want to get breaking news updates about what is happening with the deputy gangs, you can follow at LASD Gangs on all social media. I'm also giving updates. I'm on Twitter at Cerise Castle. I'm on Instagram at Your Majesty. Yeah, those are my handles.
Fabulous. Once again, Cerise Castle, thank you for joining us. And thank you all for tuning in. This has been another episode of Locatora Radio.
Locatora Radio is a production of Locatora Productions in partnership with iHeart's My Cultura Podcast Network.
For more podcasts, listen to the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Besitos! Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela.
Hosted by Mala Muñoz
and Diosa Femme.
Network.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA. And I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.